This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Welcome back to Astronomy Magazine. My name is Jennifer. This week we continue with the May issue of the magazine with the cover story, The Closest Black Holes in the Universe. Now, with Gaia DR3 in Karim's capable hands, two stars stood out among the millions of others in the database. And with all the analyses complete, it turns out they are orbiting the two closest black holes to Earth. Does this puzzle piece belong? The first star in question is about as sun-like as they get. It's about the same size and mass as the Sun, lying 1,560 light-years away. The star is bright enough to be easily spotted by a professional telescope. However, the similarities end there. Unlike our Sun, this star is orbiting an invisible, massive companion every 6 months, at roughly the distance between Mars and the Sun. Follow-up observations to confirm the orbit indicated the unseen object was 10 times the mass of the Sun, making it much more massive than the visible star. And it couldn't be another star, because one that massive would be brighter and more easily spotted than the first star. Plus, nothing else known can be as weighty and yet still dark. The simple process of elimination led to the conclusion that the invisible companion must be a black hole. Karim named it Gaia BH1, the closest known black hole to Earth. The discovery made headlines and rocked the astronomical world. Not only is Gaia BH1 three times closer than the now outranked closest black hole, V616 Mons Sirotis, but it's a dormant black hole, which means that it doesn't pull material from its companion to form an accretion disk. Such an object had never been discovered before. Because the orbit's as wide as it is, we can look at the evolution of the black hole itself, explains Katie Brevik, an astronomer at Carnegie Mellon University who studies how stars and black holes evolve. This thing is an amazing gold mine for studying how black holes form. One unknown factor is how the system formed in the first place. Binary interactions shrink orbits over time, says Brevik, and at present, we basically think it's impossible to create a black hole like this in isolation. In other words, we don't understand how the Gaia BH1 system, with its black hole and its sun-like star, came to be, because all previously known black holes in binary systems likely evolved by sharing material with their companion while both were still stars. What's more, the sun-like companion appears completely untouched, with no evidence of any previous close interactions with another star or black hole. That's a puzzle, Brevik says. There are a few possibilities on the table. If this were originally a triple system, where one companion was either ejected or swallowed by the black hole, but confirming such a history would be extremely difficult. Alternatively, perhaps the sun-like star and the star that eventually became Gaia BH1 were both born in the same crowded cluster of stars and got nudged into a common orbit. That's also a tough scenario to prove at this stage, millions of years later. The discovery led to other questions as well. Was Gaia BH1 truly dormant? Was it the only object like it out there? That's where I came in. To detect or not to detect? If Karim's scientific reputation lies in debunking, and sometimes finding, black holes, my own lies in detecting radio emission from black holes, usually as they tear stars apart and eat them. See my story in the December 2021 issue, How to Swallow a Star. When the news of Gaia BH1 came out in late 2022, my office at Harvard was down the hall from Karim's, so I had to run in and ask, had he or his colleagues considered a dedicated observation of the source with the Very Large Array, VLA, in New Mexico? After all, that sun-like star has a solar wind of particles, just like that of our own sun. And at such a close distance to us, a few hours of VLA time would likely be enough to either detect emission as these particles fall into the black hole, or to establish that it must have a very low rate of accretion. Karim agreed and proceeded to secure the required VLA observation time to get a better look. Unfortunately, no radio waves popped up at Gaia BH1's location. But it wasn't all bad news. A few days later, while commiserating the result, Karim mentioned, "You know, I have a second candidate in the Gaia data, which would be the second closest black hole to Earth if proven. And it might be a better bet for detecting radio emission, but it's in the southern hemisphere. Interested?" I don't think anyone who becomes an astronomer would say no to an opportunity like that. Karim filled me in on the details. At 3,800 light-years away, Gaia BH2 is farther than Gaia BH1. It lies 5 AU from its binary star companion, roughly the distance from the Sun to Jupiter, which means one orbit takes 3.5 years to complete. However, as luck would have it, the pair would approach each other most closely, known as periastron, in February 2023. And what's more, the star in this case is a red giant. Our own sun will someday become a red giant as it begins to run out of hydrogen in its core, swelling up, cooling off, which turns it red, and developing a much stronger solar wind. So Gaia BH2 might be farther from Earth than Gaia BH1, but the star's stronger stream of particles made it a far better bet that we'd detect emission from accretion onto the black hole. And if we still didn't detect anything, it would mean we'd confirmed a new category of black holes that we have no chance of observing directly with current technology. Emergency observing proposals were written and approved for the Meerkat telescope in South Africa, and our observation was scheduled for periastron. Before I knew it, it was a snowy winter weekend in New England, and I woke up to an email saying the observation had been successful. Now the real fun could begin. There are several reasons I chose to become an astronomer, but each time I get a fresh observation, only one dominates my mind. That instant where, after impatiently waiting for a data transfer from halfway around the world, it finishes and you're briefly the only person in the world who knows something new about the cosmos. How do you describe such a significant, soul-filling feeling, especially when the topic is whether we can detect a new type of black hole? It's addictive, I can tell you that much. When the blank, black patch of pixels showed up on my screen, I wasn't really surprised that it wouldn't be that easy. Not detecting something is never quite as exciting as detecting it, but this time the absence of emission filled me with a wonder on its own. Based on our understanding of black holes and stellar environments, we really should have seen radio emission. The fact that we didn't indicates those stellar wind particles never get close enough to Gaia BH2's event horizon to accrete and generate radio waves, which it possibly means something is stopping them. Maybe a strong wind near the event horizon, blowing them away? I excitedly began imagining all the possible reasons for the non-detection. My mind strayed for a moment to a hypothesized family of black holes we have never directly detected, called isolated or rogue black holes. These have no companion at all, and an estimated 100 million are thought to silently roam our Milky Way. Might we detect them as they interact with the occasional stray gas and dust? Based on the results from Gaia BH2, not a chance. Deep space is not a perfect vacuum, but it's far emptier than the space where the Gaia black holes live. If a black hole is isolated, the lack of emission from Gaia BH1 and BH2 insinuates it's not possible to detect rogue black holes electromagnetically from their accretion, and that we still need quite some time until we can confirm their existence given today's technology. It's a fascinating and terrifying thought straight out of a science fiction story and brought to life by my radio data. This new family of black holes may be the darkest we've directly detected yet without seeing X-rays or gravitational waves. But the exciting news is that our studies of them are just the beginning. Gaia's mission isn't nearly over, and ESA plans to collect data for ever more precise measurements on millions of objects until 2030. In its next data release, scheduled for 2025, we expect dozens more members of this new black hole family to be in the catalog, waiting to be found. And when that does happen, we'll be ready. Yvette Sendes is a radio astronomer and will begin as an assistant professor of physics at the University of Oregon in summer 2024. You can visit her website at yvettesendes.com. We have a couple of inserts for this article. Forming an accretion disk. Accretion disks are hot, bright disks of swirling gas and dust surrounding black holes. They emit across the electromagnetic spectrum, from high-energy gamma rays and X-rays, through visible and infrared light, to radio waves, and give off the light we see from black holes. Astronomers study accretion disks in order to understand more about black holes themselves, as well as their environments. 1. A sun-like star starts out on an eccentric orbit around a black hole. Interactions with other objects can alter this orbit, sending it toward the black hole. 2. Strong tides near the black hole increasingly perturb and distort the star. If the star passes too close, it is ripped apart. The side of the star facing the black hole is the first to lose its outer layers. 3. Material from the star settles into a disk around the black hole. Matter from the outermost parts of the disk slowly works its way to the inner edge, where it falls past the event horizon. 4. Magnetic fields in the disk can power narrow but intense jets of particles shooting away from the disk, moving at nearly the speed of light. Anatomy of an accreting black hole. Accretion disk. A rotating disk of superheated gas and dust surrounds a feeding black hole. This material lies outside the event horizon and can either be eaten by the black hole or forced away by magnetic fields. Singularity. According to general relativity, a singularity resides at the center of a black hole. Singularities have mass but no volume, thus infinite density and gravitational forces that are infinitely strong. Event horizon. The event horizon surrounding a black hole is the point past which nothing can escape, not even light. Space-time outside the event horizon is normal, but anything within it cannot be described by the known laws of physics. Relativistic jet. Once a black hole has formed an accretion disk, magnetic fields accelerate a fraction of particles from the disk to nearly the speed of light and shoot them out along the black hole's axis of rotation. Photon sphere. As the material in the accretion disk heats up, it emits radiation at multiple wavelengths. Photons close to the event horizon have their paths bent instead of traveling linearly and form a bright ring, enveloping the black hole's circular shadow regardless of viewing angle. Black holes don't suck. One common misconception about black holes is the idea that they are similar to cosmic vacuum cleaners, sucking in and swallowing in everything near them. However, this is not the case. While a black hole contains a lot of mass in a very small space, it doesn't exert any extra force beyond the same gravitation that the Sun, Earth, or any other object with mass has in the universe. As an example, imagine if the Sun immediately collapsed into a black hole. Our new black hole Sun would be the same mass, but just a mile, 1.6 kilometers, or so in radius. Amazingly, Earth and all the planets would continue to orbit on the same trajectories as before, undisturbed. It's only if you traveled too close to the black hole that you'd be ripped apart, just as the Sun currently rips apart comets that wander too near. But if you kept your distance, there'd be no danger of getting sucked in. By YC. That's the end of that article. Our next article, A Hero's Buried Treasure. JWST shows Herbig Haro 797 to be twice the object astronomers expected. By Richard Talcott. When the James Webb Space Telescope, JWST, opened its eye to the universe in 2022, scientists anticipated getting a whole new view of star formation. The instrument's ability to see infrared light not only would help pierce the dusty veil that too often hides star birth from optical astronomers, but it also would reveal emission from many of the simple molecules that populate stellar nurseries. Now, researchers have harnessed both of these powers to reveal the inner workings of Herbig-Haro Object 797, HH-797, the outflow from a protostar still condensing from the interstellar medium. JWST's exquisite resolution shows that what astronomers previously thought was a single protostar with oppositely directed outflows is actually two protostars, each with its own pair of outflows. The lowdown on HH-797. JWST's target lies in the southwestern corner of Open Star Cluster IC-348. This stellar group, still immersed in its natal cocoon, started forming 2 million to 3 million years ago near the eastern edge of the Perseus Molecular Cloud Complex. The region lies roughly 1,000 light years from Earth, providing astronomers with a closer look than they can get at most other star-forming regions. A protostar like the heart of HH-797 has only just begun its journey to stardom. It continues to pull in nearby gas and dust, which forms an accretion disk that lies in the rotating object's equatorial plane. If it eats too much of this material too quickly, the developing star spews out the excess out in two jets aligned with the protostar's rotational axis. These outflows carry away angular momentum, slowing the star's spin rate and helping it to keep from flying apart. The jets themselves travel at hundreds of thousands of miles per hour. When they collide with their surroundings, they create shock waves that excite the interstellar molecules and cause them to emit infrared light. JWST is particularly attuned to picking up radiation from molecular hydrogen and carbon monoxide, creating the glorious details seen in the large image at right. A deep dive into HH-797. The luminous jets from HH-797 dominate the bottom half of the new JWST photograph. Although previous ground-based observations showed little of this detail, they were able to describe the velocities of the molecular gas. The material on the south, right side moves away from us, while that on the north, left side approaches. Even more intriguing, earlier studies suggested that the jets were rotating, with the west top side spinning toward us, and the east bottom side receding. JWST revealed the truth. HH-797 comprises two sets of jets that run nearly parallel to one another. Each has its own set of shock waves moving at slightly different speeds, mimicking a single rotating outflow. The jets arise from a double star embedded in the dark gap, located about one-third of the way from the right edge to the left edge of the jet. Astronomers estimate that each of these protostars is only a few thousand years old, and eventually will become stars similar to the Sun. Adding to the JWST scene is the enigmatic object LRLL-54361 near the top of the image. Although this fan-shaped emission nebula also seems to be the creation of a protostar pair, this one releases a burst of light that propagates through the surrounding dust cloud approximately every 25 days. Contributing editor Richard Talcott described how to view The Great American Eclipse Part 2 in the April issue. That's the end of that article. Our next article, Inside America's Unsung Space Center. Deep in the heart of Texas, the Southwest Research Institute creates some of the most innovative space technologies. By Robert Reeves. When we think of space in Texas, our thoughts jump to Houston and the Johnson Space Center, home of NASA's Mission Control Center, and where the amazing Apollo expeditions and the International Space Station were developed. But Texas has another connection to space. Nested on a peaceful 1,500-acre campus on the west side of San Antonio, the Southwest Research Institute, SWRI, has been exploring the solar system for the past several decades. It has evolved into a major force in space science and robotics, responsible for some of NASA's biggest success stories. San Antonio's fame is often associated with the Alamo and sports teams, but SWRI is establishing the area as an active hub in the continued investigation of our solar system. During a visit to the campus, I got to see some of these advancements firsthand. Up-and-coming research. SWRI was founded in 1947 by Tom Slick Jr., the son of a wealthy Oklahoma oil prospector. Slick leveraged his family's fortune to become an adventurer, world explorer, cryptozoology enthusiast, and philanthropist. In 1941, he created the Foundation of Applied Research, which later evolved into the prestigious Texas Biomedical Research Institute. Branching into chemistry and physics, Slick created SWRI, located on the SR Ranch, west of the once sleepy town of San Antonio. Since then, the town has grown into the seventh largest city in the U.S. by population, and SWRI has kept pace with that growth. It currently has more than 2.5 million square feet, 232,000 square meters, of laboratory, testing, and office space to continue Slick's vision. Of the organization's 3,100 current staff, nearly 500 work in the space exploration sector, with over 100 at the Solar System Science and Exploration Division in Boulder, Colorado. SWRI branched into space exploration in the 1960s, with projects such as zero-gravity fire extinguishers carried on all Apollo flights, and a body mass scale used on the first U.S. space station, Skylab. In the 1970s and 1980s, NASA's Mariner, Pioneer, and Voyager missions dazzled us with jaw-dropping close-up views of the solar system's major planets. These missions filled in the blank spots of our solar system, but a true understanding of these worlds required more specialized exploration. It was SWRI that began work on the development, operation, and science analysis of follow-up missions. In 1985, experimental space physicist Jim Birch became a key figure in the story of SWRI's rise to scientific prominence by establishing the Space Sciences Division. A decade later, Birch became the principal investigator for NASA's Imager for Magnetopause to Aurora Global Exploration, IMAGE, mission. Launched in 2000, this was the first space mission to explore the interaction of solar particles with Earth's magnetic field and atmosphere. Birch is now Senior Vice President of SWRI's space sector. In the 90s, SWRI worked on projects like the Cassini Plasma Spectrometer, CAPS, and Ion and Neutral Mass Spectrometer, INMS, key space physics instruments for NASA's Cassini orbiter, which surveyed the Saturn system from 2004 through 2017. In 2012, when NASA's Curiosity rover landed on Mars, it carried SWRI's Radiation Assessment Detector, RAD, to characterize the surface radiation levels on the Red Planet. That is all the time we have for today. Again, this has been the May issue of Astronomy Magazine. Thank you so much for listening.